listener production. Hi everyone, Sasha Barbagat with you for this Friday morning episode of The Briefing. I think it'd be fair to say last year's epic World Cup run by the Matildas was something a lot of us needed. Amid a grim news cycle, our Aussie women gave us something to unite behind and get excited about. And aside from that, the Matildas also managed to inspire a whole new generation of players.
The new demand is coming somewhat more from the women and girls side of the game, because that's where the growth is being experienced at its highest. I mean, we shouldn't overlook the growth in men's and boys' football too, because a lot of young boys found the Matildas incredibly inspirational.
We are starting to see now just how big of an impact the team and its success have had on participation numbers, not just for girls, but also boys and older women too. In today's deep dive, we have a look at what needs to happen now to ensure the future of girls in sport and the continued success of women's football in Australia. First though, Antoinette Latouf is here for the headlines. It is Friday, May 3rd.
President Joe Biden has now weighed in about the college protests across the US, saying violent protests are not protected and that it's against the law when violence occurs. As to whether the action by students has changed the way he thinks about policies in the Middle East, this is what he had to say.
Mr. President, have the protests forced you to reconsider any of the policies with regard to the region?
No. Thank you.
Mr. President, do you think the National Guard should intervene?
No.
So the answers were no and no. In an escalation, police in LA moved in to try and dismantle the pro-Palestinian encampment at UCLA, and they clashed with protesters. Officers wearing body armor and helmets pulled down barricades and tents while demonstrators tried to stop them, with some carrying makeshift shields and umbrellas. Dozens of loud explosions were heard during the clash from flashbang charges or stun grenades fired by police.
More than 200 people have been arrested, while over 1,000 arrests have been made across the United States at similar protests in recent days. The raid comes after the university itself declared the encampment unlawful. It is estimated 300 to 500 people were hunkered down inside, while around 2,000 more had gathered outside the barricades in a show of support. Now, coming back home in Australia, where similar encampments are happening at universities across Australia, things have remained pretty peaceful. We did visit the Sydney University one and spoke to student activists there who said they hadn't been contacted by police or had any communication with them. But we did see tensions escalate in Melbourne, with a bit of a standoff ensuing between the anti-Israel student encampment and Jewish groups. So it's sad to see, Antoinette, what's happening over in the US. I think it's diluting the message of what these protesters are trying to achieve. I just hope we don't see things go down a similar path here in Australia. I don't get the sense that they will to the same extent.
And at the same time, Sasha, Israeli officials are increasingly concerned that the UN's top criminal court, the ICC, is planning to seek arrest warrants for their top military and political leaders. That includes Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. So there are reports circling about that. It's yet to be confirmed. But Netanyahu has called for the prospect of senior Israeli figures being on a list of people to be arrested. He said this is an outrage of historic proportions and has accused the ICC of attempting to paralyze Israel's ability to defend itself. And the very fact that Netanyahu is responding, like, or making such strident public comments, is actually suggesting that behind the scenes, these scenarios are actually being actively discussed.
We're getting more details about a new ad campaign that's launching next month, announced by the federal government this week, in the fight to tackle violence against women. Now, these are going to be aimed at parents, and they'll focus on the harmful misogynistic content their kids are being exposed to on social media. There will be a particular focus on controversial influencers who spread harmful gender stereotypes and condone violence against women. That's the Andrew Tates of the world.
And as part of this new campaign, mums, dads and caregivers will be able to access a tool that'll show them exactly what the social feed of the average Aussie kid is seeing every day. Government research indicates around 25% of teenage boys look up to misogynistic influencers. And there's word that Canberra will be looking at engaging influencers to make their own anti-sexism content. Sasha, I'm just not sure that the public servants in Canberra are going to be able to, I don't know, to create an interesting, cool influencer that teenage boys will want to listen to.
Well, I think what they're trying to do, they did it with smoking they used existing influencers to be like, hey, fellow followers, you know, smoking is bad. So I think that's more the vibe they want to go for, is actually engage who we already have to share this. And I can actually think of a bunch who would be really great at sharing this message, trying to be like, hey, you know, think footy players and things like that, other figures that young teenage boys might look up to.
Yeah, you know what really shocked me? The other day, my niece, who's 9 years old, she was just kind of running and skipping, and then she kind of jumped down a stair, and as she did, she landed, and she was like, Andrew Tate! And I was like, sorry, Sadie, what did you say? She's like, Andrew Tate. Like, as though, because the jump she did was like really cool and big. I was like, how do you know Andrew Tate? So when she's on YouTube watching whatever, like, you know, whatever sort of content a 9-year-old girl likes to watch, pretty innocuous stuff, then she gets Andrew Tate offered to her. And I'm like, wow, here's this 9-year-old just kind of using the word Andrew Tate as some kind of like synonymous with like, look how cool this jump is.
Wow.
So it's infiltrating in ways that I think a lot of parents wouldn't even realize.
Yeah, and I think that's the real key focus of this campaign, is going to be like, this is what your kids are seeing. Educate yourselves so that you can then educate them. Just quickly before we move on to the next headline, I did want to touch on the police ministers from the states and territories are going to be meeting today as well. They're meeting with the Attorney General to discuss how police can better respond to potential DV offenders or offenders who have already committed acts. One of the things they're going to be looking at is how to better spot red flags. And part of this is that some perps come off as quote unquote normal in society. They have jobs and they function and they seem like, you know, loving dads and partners. But the problem is their behavior behind the scenes, whether it's controlling, like coercive control, obsessive behaviors, whether they're stalking their partners, are relatively invisible to police. So that's going to be something they look at. My question is, though, why are they not looking at bail laws, which I haven't seen mentioned in any reports? And I think that's what a lot of campaigners are calling for, is changes to when we let offenders out on bail.
A first-of-its-kind report into the state of Australia's housing system has found, well, sadly, the crisis isn't going anywhere. So Labor set up its own expert council to look into the issues plaguing housing in this country. And the report highlighted supply as one of the main problems. The National Housing Supply and Affordability Council paper also highlighted migration as a factor, saying it's making the crisis more acute because there simply aren't enough homes to keep up with demand. It's also warned that shortfalls in social and affordable housing will continue, and tax system imbalances are creating inequality between those who can and those who can't afford to buy.
Yeah, and I think one interesting tidbit that did come out as well was that it challenged Labor's pledge to build 1.2 million homes over the next 5 years, and basically said, well, that's pretty ambitious because, as we see, only 943,000 will be built in that time. Obviously, that's a significant shortfall from the 1.2 mil target. It's going to keep happening, people. Strap yourselves in for a long ride.
Yeah, look, and I think that, you know, the main things that have been called on for years and years is that the government needs to reform things like negative gearing and capital gains tax concession, and to invest more in social and affordable housing. So that's at the, you know, the lower end, rather than building houses that a lot of people will be priced out of. And if we don't start doing those things, anti-migrant sentiment is going to continue to grow, because people are like, well, don't bring in those migrants, we can't house them. But then our economy needs those migrants because we have an aging population, we need them for our workforce, and there are so many reasons why we need migrants. And so I just think, unfairly, those who do arrive to this country because we need them in so many other ways aren't going to get sort of the welcome and an embrace that they deserve.
And it seems we're all becoming a bunch of prudes, with sex scenes in Hollywood movies declining by 40% since the year 2000. So this is from a new report commissioned by The Economist, which looked at the top grossing 250 films each year since the millennium and found the number of movies with no sex portrayed at all has climbed from less than 20% in 2000 to more than three quarters of films in 2023. As to why we're seeing this trend, well, there are no real answers, but apparently Gen Z is having some sort of influence. And interestingly, over the same time period, other so-called taboos like swearing and violence have remained at about the same levels. Antoinette, there's nothing worse than sitting with your parents watching a movie and a sex scene comes on and you have to sit there cringing internally. You don't want to like get up and you know, be like, oh, I've got to go to the toilet or something. Like, you just got to sit through it. This happened to me when 8 Mile came out. That's the Eminem movie. And there's a very, very raunchy sex scene in that. And I still cringe to this day thinking about that. I don't know. Maybe that's what's behind the trend. Maybe millennials who went through what I did are now making movies and going, let's save future kids from the pain I went through.
Yeah. And it's interesting because Gen Z, a report from UCLA actually last year found that yes, they want to see less sex scenes in movies. And they wanted more content about platonic relationships and friendships, which I think is interesting. What also came out of the Economist study was that even though there are fewer sex scenes, there are some that are a little bit more raunchy or hardcore. And they included examples which show that, you know, now we're seeing movies with more erect penises or characters performing oral sex while their partners were menstruating. Stuff that we hadn't seen before. And I can't help but wonder, Sasha, if this shift is also because at the same time we have seen a shift an increase in female directors and writers. I wonder if the two are connected.
Maybe. You might be right there, Antoinette. Well, I highly recommend my favourite naughty movie recently was Poor Things. That's the Emma Stone one. Highly recommend it. That was good fun. Antoinette, have a fabulous weekend. Thanks for being here for the headlines. We'll see you again tomorrow for the weekend briefing. Next up is our deep dive into where women's football is at in Australia right now, a few months on from the Matildas' massive success. I'm about to hit you with some stats about women's football. This year's A-League women's season has been deemed the biggest ever for any women's sporting code in Australia. It's had the highest crowd numbers, just shy of 280,000 across the regular season. Viewership numbers have surged by over 100% on the 2022-23 season, while memberships grew by a staggering 610% on the same period. And there are hopes tomorrow's grand final between Sydney FC and Melbourne City will be a record-breaking crowd. When it comes to participation numbers, so that's girls, boys, men and women playing at their local clubs, the numbers are still trickling in. But Football Australia says they've seen at least a 20% increase in overall enrolments from winter season 2023 to winter season 2024. In 2023, there were 190,746 registered women and girls playing soccer in Australia. That number is up almost 10% on 2022 numbers. And Football Australia is expecting to see even bigger growth in 2024 when the true impact of the Matildas will be seen. It is worth mentioning too that participation among boys and men is growing as well, also inspired by our girls and the Socceroos who made it to the round of 16 at the Men's World Cup in 2022. After the crazy hype of what we saw at the Women's World Cup last year died down a little bit, there was a lot of pressure on governments and clubs to keep up the momentum. The federal government, in response, announced a $200 million initiative to improve women's sporting facilities and equipment. It is positive, but is it enough? The demand is clearly there. But does our existing infrastructure and facilities, from community clubs right to the top levels of professional competition, support this? Joining me now to talk about it is Moya Dodd. She's a lawyer, sports administrator. She was also vice captain of the Matildas and played at the team's first ever appearance at a World Cup in 1988. Moya, thanks for joining us on the briefing today. I've just rattled off a bunch of stats that show just how much we as a nation have been inspired to play soccer, but it's not even the full picture, is it?
Yeah, we've seen stats up to the end of last year which show some substantial growth around the participation in football. But of course, the big effect you'd expect to see is in the 2024 season. And that season's just got underway at community level. So those full set of stats should be through pretty soon. But my understanding is that it's about a 20% growth from last year across the board. So that, I think, is male and female football. So, you know, I think the World Cup effect is very real. I mean, 20% growth year on year is phenomenal.
Do you think we realised the true impact a campaign like the Matildas at the World Cup could have on growing women's sport in Australia at the time? Or has this completely exceeded expectations?
Well, I think those people who've been kicking around football for a while probably knew its transformational effect on sport, just because you've seen what's happened elsewhere around the world when you have a well-resourced women's national team in a major competition, and when you host that competition and go along and the team goes a long way into it, then the nation really does become transfixed by it. We saw that with England hosting the Euros in 2022. And in fact, every World Cup that I've ever seen, everyone says, oh my goodness, this is a turning point. You know, gosh, who knew? I mean, there's been so many turning points. I'm a bit dizzy, to be honest. And it just shows what a long journey it is for women's sport to go from the point where it was not taken at all seriously or even banned. In the case of women's football, it was banned for many decades. Who would have thought that the biggest television program, the biggest rating program ever in Australia since they started using this rating system was going to be a game of women's football? I don't think anybody particularly predicted that before the World Cup. And yet, you know, here we are, biggest TV program ever. Semi-final, England versus Australia.
I remember I watched it. I was screaming at the top of my lungs. It was so great. The great thing that we're seeing, and this is kind of what we saw after the World Cup, was a lot of talk about, well, we need to keep up the momentum. We can't just let this be a flash in the pan moment. And we're seeing that growth. We're seeing, you know, the A-League women's season. I went along to a game actually on a Saturday afternoon, and it was at Leichhardt Oval, and it was nearly packed out. It was just so amazing to see. And my friends were Sydney FC members, and I said, oh, you know, how long have you been coming? They said, oh, we've been coming for years. I'm like, how different is this? And they said, this is worlds apart. Sometimes they'd barely get 100 people in the grounds, and now there's thousands of people turning out on a Saturday afternoon to watch women play football, which is just great. But my question is, you know, can we support this growth? Are the, you know, systems, is the infrastructure in place, are the facilities in place to make sure that with all these extra girls and women coming to play soccer, that they actually can?
Well, there's no doubt that, especially in populated urban areas, there's a crunch on playing space. And there was before the World Cup, and there's an even greater strain on it now. I mean, that is partly being managed through the addition of some synthetic pitches, which can be used even if it rains. And, you know, you can kind of use it 24 hours a day if you want, and you don't have to worry about the grass getting ripped up. That said, there are still, I think, some pretty contentious allocation issues around many suburbs of Sydney. Teams that used to get a whole field to train on or a half field are now getting a half or a quarter. They're having to share facilities more simply because there's more demand. I think one important aspect of that is that the new demand is coming somewhat more from the women and girls side of the game, because that's where the growth is being experienced at its highest. I mean, we shouldn't overlook the growth in men's and boys' football too, because a lot of young boys found the Matildas incredibly inspirational, and they didn't really see the gender. I mean, they didn't kind of say, oh, well, that's obviously a girls' game, I can't play that. I mean, they just saw it as a game, and there's lots of hilarious anecdotes about little boys all over Australia who are arguing about who can be Mackenzie Arnold and play in goal, or, you know, telling their mates that they'll be Katrina Gorry and play in midfield, and you be Ellie Carpenter and you go play at the back. So, you know, they've become a reference point for people of all genders in Australia. But that said, I think it's the women and girls side of the game that is growing the fastest. And when it comes to facilities, you know, if they're kind of full and you're the new team in town, then you've got to go find a place to play. So I think local councils and anyone in charge of allocating green space in Australia at the moment is under pressure to find more places to play, maybe put lights up so that training can go on in the evening. And not only that, but everything that goes around it. It's not just the grass, it's the referees, the coaches, and the administrators.
You mentioned there refs and coaches, and we do have some stats on that from 2023. So there were 57,000 coaches, only 26% were women, while for refs out of 12,000, just 15% for women. Is this a space that needs more attention? Should we be encouraging more women at a community level and, you know, then proceeding through to professional to be getting involved in coaching and refereeing?
That's definitely an important part of the game, and they're also authority figures in the game. So in the same way as it's important to have women in parliament or women in business or women at senior management layers of corporates, for all of the reasons that that's important, it's also important to have women involved in positions of decision-making and authority in sport. When my kids were young, I remember going to a session and the organiser came out with holding a bunch of whistles on strings and said, oh, we're looking for some dads to be the game leaders, or these are kind of referees for very little kids. And, you know, I kind of looked around and thought, I wonder what it is on my football CV that doesn't qualify me to be a game leader in the under fives. and it was just, you know, I mean, that they weren't thinking to exclude me in any way. They just really weren't thinking about it, and they just used the language that had been there as they grew up, which is that, you know, it's the dads that are the community coaches because they've probably played the game, right? And if women were excluding from playing the game over the decades, then, well, clearly they're not going to know enough about it to coach the game. And actually we need more coaches, so we need to be tapping into the other half of the population as well. If dads will help a bit more with childcare and housework, then I guess the mums can go out at night and coach a soccer team.
Oh, couldn't have said it better myself, Moya. Love that. Look, you know, this A-League women's season, which is wrapping up tomorrow with Sydney FC and Melbourne City, it's been deemed the most successful to date. And that's not just for the league itself, but also for all codes of women's sport across Australia. I wanted to ask you, as someone who is a former player, what does that support mean to the women on the field?
Yeah, it's fabulous. I mean, you know, you hear them talking about the connection they have with the fans, and it's special. I mean, I really think that the fans of women's sport show up for slightly different reasons to the fans of men's sport. Men's sport is highly commercialised to the point of almost, in some codes, you know, saturation, I would say. But women's sport globally, I think, is showing a bit of a different take on all of that. If you look at what's happening in the US in the NWSL, the attendances are just extraordinary. And those people will say to you, look, we're not just selling a great game of sport. I mean, it is a great game of sport. There are top players there, but we're also selling purpose, social purpose. There is a sense of, you know, this is an important part of a movement in society towards women's empowerment, towards gender equality, towards greater inclusion in sport. And you look at the fan base and it's very diverse and very accepting and very tolerant. And that's part of why you don't see too much aggression between rival groups of fans. I mean, the A-League and the Matildas have a fabulous group of dedicated fans. You know, at A-League's games, they're more likely to be picking each other up at the airport and sleeping on each other's couches for interstate games rather than having a bit of biff, because they're sort of dedicated to the growth and the elevation of the idea that women can play professionally in leagues week in, week out, and enjoy the careers, become the role models for so much more. They're very connected, and what you see kind of on digital media, if you sift out the ugly stuff, what you see is a lot of popular culture, and that's very much a part of the connection and the growth of women's sport. The women players, they will cultivate fan connections through their Instagrams and other social media presence, because that personal brand is really important to their income. Their wages are relatively lower. Their sponsorships will be relatively higher in women's sport. So it constitutes a greater proportion of their income. They're more committed to developing those deep fan connections. And you see it in their socials. So you know, popular culture is also something that is, it's circular, right? I mean, the players contribute popular culture and they also feed off it. They're part of it and they feed off it. And that contributes, I think, to the rising tide of women's sport in Australia, but also all over the world.
And hopefully it's something that we'll only see continue. Moya Dodd, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to today's briefing. That is all for this morning. Before you go, though, we'd love it if you could share this app with someone you think might enjoy it. And if you want to keep up with our other content, you can check us out on Instagram at The Briefing Podcast. We're also on TikTok and YouTube. Search Listener Newsroom. I'm Sasha Barbagat. See you next time. Listener.